hum," said the voice. But Kate, looking up at Christopher in an agony of fear, saw that for one moment at least, she had reached and held him. The right hand was clenched so hard over the armlet that she could see the heavy metal twisting under the strain.
"Christopher, Christopher, be still," she implored him. "That's all you have to do. Be still a little longer. Keep yourself from moving. It's almost over. Sir Geoffrey's coming. He's on the road now. Don't you remember? Randall took him the word weeks ago, and he knows, and he's coming."
The gray creature lifted its shadowy head a fraction, and the dance stopped.
"Weeks ago?" murmured the voice. "Why is he not here, then? Ask yourself, Tind Payer. Do you, in your heart of hearts, believe that he will come? Why should he? Has he ever truly cared for you? Why should he? Who killed his mother? Who wrecked the life of his father? Who hated his wife? Who lost his daughter? When have you ever, until now, brought anything to anyone you love except heartbreak and shame? How do you know but that if you go on, you may not do it again? One act now, and you are free forever. Why not? What have you to live for? What have you?"
As it spoke, the voices of the fairy folk began to rise again. This time, not in a cry or a chant, but in one low, sustained, unbearable moan that ran, crawling cold as a snake, through every nerve of Kate's body. The sound mingled with the words of the gray creature, blurring and distorting them, so that for one moment, Kate thought, first, that they were coming from somewhere deep in her own body, and then that it was some other voice speaking, her mother's voice.
"Go away, child. I cannot bear the sight of you."
Her old nurse's voice.
"There, there, Miss Catherine. We can't all be as pretty and loving as your sister."
Even Alicia's voice crying sweetly.
"Oh, Kate, Kate, I do wish you were like me. Truly, I do."
The next moment, all the sounds had faded and were lost in a voiceless, aching misery that came down on her spirit like the insufferable sense of the earth and the stone pressing about her at an attack of the weight. And then, in a rush of shame, her thoughts came back to Christopher. If it could do this to her, what was it doing to him?
"And you can be free of the shame and the fear," the gray creature was repeating softly. "One act, and you are free of them forever. More, you will be honored in your death. It will be a proof of your worth that even your brother will be compelled to understand. What else have you to live for? Ask yourself, Tind Payer. What else have you to live for?"
"The manor," said Kate.
"Manor?"
For the first time, the voice hesitated, fumbling over the words, and it came to Kate with a strange, quick pride that whatever else Christopher might have told it, he had not told it about the manor.
"Yes, the manor," she hurried on, "and the village, and the house, and the ditching, and the drainage, and the orchard, and the dairy."
She was throwing in everything she could think of, frantically, as if she might have tried to fill up a broken dike with the first stones that came to her hand.
"You never did decide where you wanted to build the new dairy."
But the gray creature had instantly recovered from its slip.
"Manor," said the voice smoothly. "You? What sort of end is that for a man? To pass your life digging last autumn's rot into the dirt so that this autumn's rot may be dug into it again next spring? Breed animals to use and to kill? Breed like an animal yourself and rear sons for stronger men to use and kill in their turn? Build a house that may be swept away into ruin by one storm of wind or one lighted candle in the hand of a fool? No, young lord. That will do well enough for those who are born to be servants and scrubbers. But with some men, it is otherwise. They are born great, and if their greatness cannot show itself in their lives because of some curse or affliction, it may yet be made plain in their death.